Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
The Loch Ness Monster. One of the earliest monsters I heard about was Loch Ness Monster. Something going on there. Of course, you know, I'm very old. And maybe this happened in the 13th century or something like that. Dr. Z, tell us what you know.
So the Loch Ness Monster, from what I understand, is an unidentified aquatic monster. Some people say four paddles or flippers, a larger sort of like football-shaped body and a very long neck with a small head, famously residing in Scotland. But one thing that I do think is interesting about the Loch Ness Monster are there are sort of variations of other types of aquatic monsters that resemble a similar form to that. And I think that is directly attributed to the our fossil record, actually.
So yeah, some people say that this is maybe a descendant of some kind of creature from our prehistory that just managed to survive despite all.
I mean, that would be great. I think part of us, we want to believe that something so ancient and so prolific could actually exist. I mean, that would be fantastic. Again, I'm not going to completely rule it out because I'm not an expert. Maybe we haven't discovered it yet. But personally, I think it is unlikely, especially because there's only ever been one reported. So how would it be propagating? So it would have to be essentially immortal, which would be very interesting, again, if it could be proven that it is true. But I doubt that it has been.
Once in a while, though, these things that we think are extinct you know, wash up on beaches or somebody finds them, you know. So who knows? Like, maybe there is still, you know, a pterotaur out there flying around, even though it's supposed to be extinct. You know, so maybe there are a few of them, but people just don't see them that often. And then when somebody does, they have this kind of reaction that you talk about where they're so unused to it that they fill in the blanks with a lot of their own mythology.
No, I mean, again, I think it'd be, I love the movie Jurassic Park. If there was a plesiosaurus or some remnant or offspring of that floating around somewhere in a body of water here, I think that'd be fantastic. But again, I think it's the what if. It's the possibility that it could exist that people are so fascinated by.
Getting into the cultural side of things a bit again, and this is super interesting for me too in a way. I mean, when we look at something like, say, superheroes, they're a reflection of the cultural climate of the times, you know, for example, where people feel disenfranchised from wealth or justice, and they need this character to fill in that void. And so monsters are almost doing the same thing, but they're almost kind of like an anti-hero.
Yeah.
In a way.
No, I think that's very true. I think that's a very astute observation. I think, like you said, monsters fill in the gaps of what we're scared of or what we are trying to think is deviant or not supposed to be happening. So I fall under the school of belief that I think monsters, or what we call monsters, are meant to sort of police us in our social habits and our religious habits, even in our interactions with other people and with the environment. Of course, there's always, you know, the light and the dark. That's in so many different global mythologies as well, is the idea of you can't have the evil without the good and vice versa. So yeah, the superheroes, what would be the point of them and having these heroic characters if they didn't have something to fight, a villain? But again, I think it depends on the perspective that you're looking at, because even a lot of the villains, you know, like Lex Luthor is the first one that pops into mind, one of the most famous. I doubt that he would see himself as a monster, but so many other people who, you know, fans of Superman would.
Exactly. There are characters that definitely that you know, we would look at them and they're not necessarily these handsome suited characters with the perfect square jaw and everything else. It's like, we're back to Beauty and the Beast again. Mm-hmm. They can be these counterintuitive, but still ethically good characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like the real human condition, right? I mean, I don't know anyone personally who's completely good or completely bad. So I think all these stories, right, superheroes, monsters, in some ways are just extremes of the different sort of strata that exist in our own imaginations, in our own societies.
What about as a social control mechanism?
Yeah. Monsters are serve as social control. So I'm trying to think of a good example off the top of my head. Okay, even something like the Loch Ness Monster usually doesn't harm humans, but it's, you know, in this giant body of water. And this is very true for actually almost every water-based monster I've come across in my research. A lot of the time there's a fear of either ships sinking, people drowning, or people being eaten. And as we all know, the ocean and even lakes, rivers, are water is unpredictable. So to me, it makes complete sense that someone would, you know, tell their child or tell even adults in the community that, oh, you know, when the tide rises, that's when this monster comes to prey on people, because that's when that water source is particularly dangerous to humans. So I think that's one method of social control that's, you know, about preservation of the actual physical self. And then I do think there's more cultural social policing that comes into play. Serial killer movies, like the slasher films that emerged in the 80s are a really good example of that. You know, who always gets killed in slasher films first? Those people are usually the ones seen as the deviants in real life as well.
Right, yes. Deviant in some certain way, depending on how they're, especially depending on how well they happen to be dressed at the time.
Sexuality, who they're attracted to, what substances they ingest. And I think we're seeing some changes of that recently in horror. And I think that's really interesting, but makes complete sense because as a whole, at least I like to think, but maybe I'm incorrect, that sometimes our opinions about things are changing and some are staying the same. So I think that horror movies, because they do deal really closely with the good and evil, and not just that, but like, will you live or will you die? That they're an excellent barometer of what our culture values and what it considers to be worthy of being destroyed.
Wow, that gets pretty deep. We could move into that a little bit more, but this does remind me a bit of another couple of guests we had on not long ago, back on May 31st, Chad Lewis and Kevin Lee Nelson, who had just written about the Wendigo.
Yes.
Or Wendigo. I guess there's about 30 different ways you can say it.
There are many different ways, yes.
But again, social control. We're talking about wintertime. Mm-hmm. Don't venture away from the camp or the Wendigo will get you.
Absolutely. And I did an episode about the Wendigo. I use Wendigo. So there's all different things. But absolutely, it's about don't venture away from camp, you know, stay by the campfire, not just because it keeps away actual predators and, you know, keeps you warm and alive. But from a lot of the indigenous people's stories I found in my research, that it wasn't just about like getting away from the camp, but about sharing resources. The idea that you only became a Wendigo, well, there's two different ways, but the main way is that if you ate flesh of another human, which someone would only do, right, if they had some kind of illness or if they were starving to death. So there was this community idea that we are willing to share our resources with other people in our area because it's better for the community as a whole. So that just promotes cooperation and not turning into a giant, you know, cannibalistic, crazy ice monster. So there's that.
Right,
too.
Right. Yeah. It instills a sort of ethical social responsibility through mythological fear.
Exactly.
Which I guess religions do. I mean, what about the devil or Satan? Is that not a monster?
100%. I mean, I think that a lot of the indigenous peoples here in North America would argue that the Wendigo is 100% as much of their spiritual beliefs as the devil is to Christianity. Absolutely. It's still a viable component. I mean, I got a lot of feedback on my episode saying that I shouldn't have even written the word or said the word in its entirety because they practice avoidance of that word because they do believe it's something that actually exists even today.
Right. And you get the same thing with people who are religious saying, you don't get out the Ouija board and you don't say the name of the devil because you're just asking for trouble, as if you'll be able to conjure it up somehow merely by mentioning its name through some. And this brings up the whole idea of sort of incantation.
Mm-hmm. You know, we'll get into that in the next segment, but I will not say Beetlejuice three times because I don't want to bring up Michael Keaton here. Then again, if we could, we'd have a really interesting show. Dr. Z, Gene Steinberg, and J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Hey, self-reliance gardeners. Now that you've got your crisis garden planted, the next step is to make sure all your vegetables are going to grow like crazy the rest of the summer. For that, you'll need an all-natural, full-spectrum plant food that works to not only maximize nutritional uptake for you and your family, but is also guaranteed to make your fruits and vegetables actually taste better. The name of the product is ProtoGrow, a proprietary blend of bioactive superfoods for plants, designed to produce rapid plant growth in record time, so much so that it almost forces plants to grow even under the worst light and soil conditions. It does this by combining powerful trace elements and micronutrients from seaweed extracts with a balanced blend of macronutrients from cold water fish. The result? Vegetables grow faster than ever because they now have the essential bioavailable nutrients they need. Go to growlikecrazy.com to learn more. Huge summer discounts now available. growlikecrazy.com.
7 million children suffer from asthma, more than any other chronic disease. Most asthma attacks are caused by allergic reactions to allergens, including those left behind by cockroaches and mice. In fact, 82% of U.S. households contain mouse allergens, and cockroaches are found in up to 98% of urban homes. How can you protect your family? Find out at pestworld.org. A message from the National Pest Management Association and the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology.
Attention homeowners that have ever had a broken appliance. That's a joke, right? We've all had broken appliances. I own a home just like you, and have found a way for as little as a dollar a day to have all the major appliances in my home on a warranty plan. They're guaranteed to be fixed or replaced. You know how expensive an air conditioner, the heating system, a washing machine, dryer, water heater, or refrigerator can be. For about a dollar a day, all your major appliances are protected in case they break. Unless you're Daddy Warbucks or the Monopoly guy and you don't care about money, call my friends at the Home Service Club now and get a warranty on your major appliances. It's a free call, and the first month is free. But be one of the first 25 people to call within the next 10 minutes.
800-825-6796. 800-825-6796. 800-825-6796. Again, that's 800-825-6796.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
I would say here that J. Randall Murphy is not becoming a werewolf. But even a man who is... No, I don't want to go read that.
I was going to say, I feel like
phrase.
There's a butt coming.
There's never a but, is there? We never, we no exceptions here. Randall, go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. Well, so, since you're giving me the opportunity here, why not? I think we should go through a couple more of these sort of crossover type monsters, because our listeners, they're mainly interested in ufology and UFOs and things that are connected with that. And another one that is connected with ufology is Bigfoot. Now, you've got Bigfoot, and then you've got similar creatures on the other side of the world. And I'd kind of like this clarified for our listeners. I think I've got it figured out now after watching your show, by the way. But we have over in Tibet, the abominable snowman. And I thought, well, okay, abominable snowman, Bigfoot, what's the difference? I mean, this sounds like the same thing, but over there, what have we got going with Bigfoot and abominable snowman?
Yeah, and it's not just Bigfoot, the Yeti or abominable snowman. There's some different variations. I know, I believe in Scotland, there's one called, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher this, the Firlioth, which is very similar in description, but more of a ghostly or spiritual apparition. And as you can gather from watching my Monstrum Yeti episode, I tend to believe that this is the case of a bear spotting or unusual bear behavior, maybe passed down from earlier generations of humans who encountered them more often. But that's obviously controversial. I mean, there's been evidence even in the last few years of scientists having to come out and refuting, no, this is not some kind of Neanderthal remnant going around. Although people do 100% swear up and down that Bigfoot is real, that the Yeti is real. And I think that's very interesting. But what do you all think? Do you think Bigfoot slash Yeti or any of these other large shaggy-haired humanoid creatures that can walk bipedally actually exist?
Okay, I'll go first. My older brother and his wife actually had a sighting of some kind of creature like that here in Calgary.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, they were sitting up on one of the hills just overlooking the city, enjoying the view, spending some time together. They had our family dog with them. They looked up, and this creature that they described as being a lot like a Hulk, which I guess is sort of another kind of a monster in a way, that one's straight out of sci-fi, but it came running up over the hill, and it had its head down, and it was coming towards them, and it was fairly dark, so it didn't see them, so they thought, well, let's let the dog out. I believe them both. They seem very sincere about this. There was a little bit of snow on the ground. As soon as they cracked the door of the car, it stopped and looked and saw them, and the dog went running after it, and it turned around and went running back down.
Oh, wow.
And then the dog chased it, and it went down into a ravine where there was a barbed wire fence, and they followed the dog, and the tracks got to the fence, and then they stopped. And the dog was there, and it is just as if it had vanished. But there were tracks in the snow. They said they swore this thing was real, way bigger than a normal human being. So, of course, that's anecdotal. But when you get so many other stories of people who say they saw something similar, it gets pretty hard to just dismiss them as liars, you know? So I do believe that people are having genuine experiences, but exactly what it is, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And I definitely don't think, as you said, these people should be called liars, because, you know, I'm sure they 100% experience that, the story that they're telling. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Maybe it's something that we haven't discovered yet. I think a lot about the Kraken. I personally find the ocean to be terrifying and beautiful. And to me, the stories of the Kraken talking about this giant tentacled sea monster and out, you know, that giant squid at colossal squid exist. Maybe there is some kind of other mammalian creature running around in different parts of the world that we just haven't gotten a hold of a specimen yet. I'm not saying that's not possible. I just don't know if it's supernatural, I guess, is my personal opinion.
Yes, exactly. I personally, I'm not a believer in the supernatural. I do believe that these things happen to people. They have genuine experiences. I don't know how to explain them, but whatever it is, I would say that there's got to be some sort of physical explanation. It could be a case where people are just imagining them because of some sort of a hallucination or something, but I think there are way too many experiences for even that to be a reasonable explanation when it comes to some things. But we're not here to get into so much what I think or what you think. We should really talk about some more of these very interesting monsters that are crossovers with ufology. And another one is the Chupacabra.
Oh, and yes.
Now, it started appearing along with stories of UFOs because some of the people that were reporting it were the same people who were reporting on UFOs. So I think people started associating the two, but are they really connected?
I would say no, from the knowledge that I have of that. So the original sightings of the chupacabras did occur in Puerto Rico. It gets really interesting because essentially the first sightings occurred around the time some big alien movies, I know, oh gosh, it's escaping me right now. It might have been called Alien.
Yeah.
No.
Well, there was the Ridley Scott Alien.
I'm thinking of the one with like the beautiful woman, Species.
Oh, Species, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So one of the eyewitness accounts had just seen the Species movie. So some people argue that that depiction was influenced by the movie. But I think so that's more of pop culture influencing the creature rather than I think vice versa. They still actually have no real explanation for the animal deaths that occurred in Puerto Rico that led to the chupacabra. There were more than 2,000 animals by 1996, I think, that were attributed to chupacabras. And, I mean, there were government necropsies. There were all these very interesting sort of things that happened, like search parties with political candidates and police officers. And it's fascinating. So this was something that was very real to the people in that area. And I think part of the reason with so many monsters, as we were saying, same thing with the Wendigo, right? That there was actually a real thing occurring at the same time. Animals were dying unexpectedly. People couldn't figure out why. And this creature emerged from that. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you've heard from some other people on your show before, but I think the UFO aspect came into it after the first chupacabra sightings.
I was going to give this answer before when you ask about Bigfoot, for example, whether something is going on. The problem I have with Bigfoot is that we always seem to be one or two steps away from evidence. We don't have real DNA indicating a creature of a species we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
It never seems to happen. Of course, that's also quite true about UFOs in general, that we always seem to be one step away from having solid evidence that something strange is going on. That being said, it wouldn't surprise me if there are creatures out there that can be mistaken, misidentified as something unknown, and thus we get the legends of Bigfoot. But then again, we have other weird things, too, which is the fact that there are some parts of the country, like that mysterious valley, for example, where they appear to have events that seem to encompass a number of different areas. Cattle mutilations and UFOs and Bigfoot and such. We got more to come with Dr. Z and Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNlife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNlife.com.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
As officials across the country pleaded with Americans to curb their enthusiasm for large 4th of July crowds, President Donald Trump brought the masses with a special evening of tribute and fireworks, and the president spoke of unity in the United States.
Not allow anyone to divide our citizens by race or background. We will not allow them to foment hate, discord, and distrust. we will hold fast and true to the sacred loyalties that link us all as neighbors, as Americans, and as patriots to build a future where every family is safe, where every child is surrounded by love, where every community has equal opportunity, and every citizen enjoys great and everlasting dignity.
Listen online anytime at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News. An Arizona woman fell to her death inside the Grand Canyon National Park. According to the National Park Service, the woman was taking photos with her family at Mather Point when she fell. The body was recovered by park rangers about 100 feet below the canyon's rim near the South Rim's Visitor Center. The Grand Canyon had 17 fatalities in 2018 and 19 in 2019. Grand Canyon National Park is one of the most popular tourist destinations in the U.S., drawing nearly 6.4 million visitors a year. An 8-year-old boy was killed in a shooting at an Alabama shopping mall that left 3 other people injured. Hoover Police Chief Nick DeZeris said the child was killed in the afternoon shooting at the River Chase Galleria. A girl and 2 other adults were hospitalized after the shooting. The Bessemer City School System identified the 8-year-old victim as Roy Tagayos Jr. He would have been a 3rd grader, and the school system described him as a smart child who was a jewel and big dreams of someday entering the music industry. This is USA Radio News.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women. Here's a clip from the Rachel Ray Show testing the results of Instantly Ageless.
Board certified dermatologist Dr. Whitney Bowe. If you're looking to try to turn back the clock on a budget, you know, in the privacy of your own home, but actually there's some recent technologies emerging, almost like changes the behavior of the skin while it sits on the skin.
She went off to try a product called Instantly Ageless.
Yeah.
Instantly, you could see a difference. Even the cameraman were like, wow, look at the difference.
Yeah.
But I would definitely use this product.
This product, within minutes of applying it, it was actually a very dramatic rejuvenation.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We got more to come with Dr. Z and Gene and Randall. And let's, you know, I don't want to get off that, but did you ever explore, for example, Dr. Z, situations where we have the so-called window areas where lots of weird things seem to happen in greater frequency than elsewhere?
Yes, only tangentially, like I said, about chupacabras or I'm trying to think of some other werewolves, even vampires. There were a lot of sightings of that in the early 1700s. So I do think there are certain areas and aspects of time where there are more sightings for certain types of monsters. But I think that those explanations are different depending on the type of monster.
When we get to vampires, now, supposedly the original legend of Dracula was about a mass murderer, Vlad the Impaler, from, what, the Middle Ages. Is that a major source of that legend? Or
no, that's completely urban myth. There is absolutely no evidence that Bram Stoker was influenced by Vlad the Impaler at all.
Now, I understand there were things about his private life that he kind of touched over in Dracula. Is that correct?
So, Stoker did a lot of research at various libraries in Ireland, for example, and even here, I believe, in the U.S., looking at all different kinds of mythologies and stories from folklore, history, and sort of combined them into Dracula. Contrary to popular belief, he never visited Romania or Transylvania. And like I said, he did not base the monster on Vlad the Impaler, but he definitely took so many notes. I want to say it was over 100 pages, I think, of newspaper articles. He went to grave sites to look at tombstones, talked to sailors and other people just to get their life experiences. So a lot of the things we see with Dracula and what Stoker did differently is that he combined sort of pre-existing folklore and myths of even actually like the werewolf and some undead creatures and previous iterations of the vampire and turned them into what we now more recognize as the vampire based on Dracula.
Now, one thing, too, for those who've ever read the real book, the original book, some of the movies have touched on it. But the original Dracula, the movie and the play on which it was based, only vaguely resembled the original novel, which consisted of a series of diaries from different characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in literature we call that an epistolary novel, meaning that it's told in letters, diary entries, and essentially as other fictional, like secondary texts, which I do agree. I wish we could see more of that. I think from my experience and research, the closest we actually get to an accurate depiction of Dracula would actually be Nosferatu, which was notoriously actually part of a lawsuit with Bram Stoker's wife because the similarities were so close.
Of course, we realize later when it comes to Hollywood making movies, they will buy the rights to a book. And what they produce will barely resemble that book. Mm-hmm. The most blatant example is way before you were born, Dr. Z, where they had a book called Flying Saucers from Outer Space by Major Donald Kehoe, which was, it may actually be public domain now, but it was a typical book of the 50s about UFOs possibly being spaceships that the government is hiding the secret. Hollywood bought that book and turned it into Earth versus the Flying Saucers, one of the better B sci-fi movies of the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know if you ever saw that movie. It's worth seeing if you have any interest in that kind of film, because it had brilliant special effects from Ray Harryhausen, far better than you expect in a low-budget film. But only the first 30 seconds of the film relates it all to that book.
Wow.
The rest is aliens on the loose coming here to invade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting point, actually, that you talk about liberties and interpretation. And it's not, we see that, like you said, all the time when someone tries to adapt a book for the screen. But I think we also see that in older folklore and even literature, right? Is, again, different people with different worldviews or who want to change things up, maybe turn an oral tradition into a written folklore or myth that becomes obvious. The Grimm brothers are a really great example of this because they wrote down a lot of their fairy tales to become incredibly famous today from real conversations they had with individuals, but we're not getting direct transcripts of what those people were saying. We're getting sort of their sensationalized, stylized version of a lot of those different stories.
And of course, the biggest change in Grimm was the TV show called Grimm, which had very little relationship to any of that, except you had all these creatures whose faces morphed into some kind of monster. Now, just as a corollary here, one of the TV series that actually is close to the original stories is something called Bosch, which is a police procedural about L.A. detective. Yeah. And the reason is the creator, Michael Connelly, was a producer for the show. So the creator had full control over how it became. But that's so rare in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just personally, I'm all about individual. I think that different sort of interpretations and adaptations have their place, but I love good original content, especially when it comes to monsters.
What do you, in your opinion, is sort of the most, say, recent or original different kind of monster movie that you've seen in a while?
That's hard. Like a creation of some kind of non-human monster or like a thriller horror movie, more like a slasher or zombie type?
Just whatever fits the bill, in your opinion, is with all of your experience.
I think this goes back a little bit to our earlier discussion about kind of different types of horror and how we respond. But I think I've seen a lot of horror that I've really enjoyed that relies more on the individual and like the humans as being scary or very human-like monsters being scary. Things like we've seen an increase in cults, movies about cults or witchcraft or brainwashing, isolation turning people mad. So I guess the reinvention of the human as the monster has fascinating to me.
Well, that's kind of interesting because when we're looking at something like, say, Terminator,
Yeah.
Here we're reinventing humans as machines who turn out to be our adversaries in the cause of our demise, our destruction.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the reasons I love things like the undead or zombie movies in particular, because 9 times out of 10, the zombie, and this is actually true for a lot of monster movies, the monster usually isn't the problem. It's the human response to the monster that can be just as dangerous, if not more dangerous.
Remember here, of course, with Frankenstein, I know people used to think Frankenstein was the monster, not the doctor who created the monster, but then it's the fault of Dr. Frankenstein that we had this monster to begin with. He did something that was wrong. Just sometimes it was the fault of somebody that we had Dracula, because somebody took the stake out of his heart, like they did in one of the movies where Boris Karloff plays this mad scientist. And they have the skeleton, the original Dracula, and of course he's escaping to take control of this traveling freak show. And getting mad at somebody, he pulls the stake out of Dracula's heart, and it becomes John Carradine.
Yeah, I just love all. Again, I think that humans are more often monstrous, and I think zombies are on my brain right now. Huh, pun. But I think something like 28 days later, 28 weeks later, the movie Train to Busan, which is a fantastic movie from South Korea that came out about zombie movies a few years ago that I highly recommend. Or even like Night of the Living Dead. I mean, those are all the zombie, the walking corpse or corpse-like creature hell-bent on destruction and murder doesn't mean as much of an immediate threat than things like the military or survivors who want to trick you into getting your resources. And I think that those sometimes often are the most scary movies, because it blurs the line between fiction and reality.
We're going to have some more reality right now. And then back to Dr. Z, and we're going to find the differences between reality and whatever. With Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Houseflies defecate every 4 to 5 minutes, spreading diseases and germs. Protect your food and your health with Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic, no batteries required, only $39.95. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Fire your fly swatter. Get your Bug Assault today.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product. Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I've treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from six different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
We continue with Dr. Z, and I have to say this, we think when we had the current pandemic that we're all suffering through, I wouldn't be surprised if some people said, yeah, the zombie apocalypse is here. Why are zombies so popular? I could never get into people just looking grotesque with, well, it comes out Thriller to me, and Michael Jackson, but that's just me.
No, I mean, that's definitely a cultural touchstone of zombies, but zombies, and this is kind of my passion project, as I mentioned way earlier on in this interview, my dissertation was about the undead, so studying reanimated corpses is technically my specialty, but I think that zombies, which there's a difference between a zombie and the undead, but I won't bore you with all the legitimates with that, but essentially the idea of a flesh-eating, reanimated human body goes back thousands of years in certain cultures. And it wasn't until actually Haitian slavery and some of the movement in the Atlantic slave trade that the idea of the mindless reanimated corpse was introduced largely to the Western world, particularly North America. And then with Romero and a couple other movies in the 60s as well alongside him, made the idea zombies as mindless flesh eaters. Zombies have always evolved based on the current cultural issues. So for something like Night of the Living Dead, Romero purposely didn't want there to be any clear reason why they were reanimated or why they became, you know, flesh eaters. Then we had a slew of zombie movies after that, emerging a little bit more from the Cold War and some of the communist sentiments coming up, that there was more attribution to, you know, some kind of atomic zombie. And then, of course, with things like genetic engineering and experimenting with bioweapons and terrorism, then we see more of the pandemic or the bioweapon-caused zombie. So with that being said, and I've been asked this a lot recently, with the current state of the world right now, I would guess probably 2 years from now, we're going to be seeing, again, a lot of cult movies and a lot more maybe zombie movies, but definitely sort of science causing, you know, the big evil or maybe nature responding in some kind of violent way movie. So I try to, you know, have a silver lining in everything. And I think I'm very interested to see what horror will look like in the decade following this one.
Now, bear in mind, humans caused a lot of the results of horror films. Godzilla, yeah, of course, originally as a result of nuclear tests. And just thinking when this movie came out in the 50s, it came from Japan.
Absolutely.
Right. And yeah, some kind of genetic mutation as a result of a nuclear blast, and we have this 50-foot monster with Raymond Burr. Oh, by the way, for those who ever saw the original Godzilla, the actual version did not have Raymond Burr or any English language conversation. What happened is they bought this film from Japan, redubbed it, and added this segment featuring a reporter from America to kind of narrate what was going on. Mm-hmm. Just some historical perspective.
And also when they did that, they edited out some of the more overt references and images relating to the atomic bomb, which I would argue is because trying to go to a more Western and American audience. Yeah, the original Godzilla, Gojira, came out in 1954. And as you mentioned, the sort of dubbed, recut version that was more global was definitely sterilized, at least in my opinion, of a lot of the social and political commentary in the original Japanese version. But I have a deep spot in my heart for the original Godzilla movie, not just because of the meaning that it had in Japan and for the creators, but there's something about when you actually finally see the face of the original Godzilla that is hilarious to me, because it's not really scary and his head pops up behind this mountain. It's clearly so fake that I just find him cute in the original, but I definitely can't say that with Godzilla King of the Monsters in the more recent versions.
Right.
I just wonder, though, if the original creator of that character understood how it became a cultural icon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we have, of course, Godzilla versus King Kong, and that's the end. And we have Andy Serkis playing King Kong.
Yeah. I'm here for it. I'm a huge fan of kaiju, both the older movies, the newer iterations. I've spoken on many interviews before of how much I love Mothra. So I love those kind of movies. I think that they're so fun in so many ways, and they're action movies with giant monsters, so what's not to love?
Right, and but you know what's really funny about that too is we find ourselves rooting for one or the other of them because we somehow identify with them. It's like, no, we don't want poor Godzilla. He was this giant, horrible monster that kills all kinds of people, but we don't want it to lose, you know? It's like, come on, Godzilla, get in there. You can do it.
Yeah, it's almost like Godzilla or the giant becomes like a catharsis of, you know, maybe all the destruction we want to do and like taking down the bad guy. But I think that's one of the reasons. So Mothra, the female moth sort of goddess kaiju, she actually, in a study, I want to say in the late 2000s, the actual date's escaping me right now, she was the most popular kaiju in Japan. She's more benevolent, so the destruction she causes is more by accident because she's trying to save people. And I think we see a little bit more of that in later Godzilla movies, right, with the idea of Godzilla defending humanity from some other giant crazy kaiju that's coming up.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but I always got the impression from Godzilla that it was nature's response to man's abuse of nature, specifically the nuclear weaponry, and that it was nature's way of equalizing that with its own response kind of thing. I mean, maybe I was reading too much into it, but that's kind of what I...
You're absolutely not. And I think, again, that the original Japanese version of the film makes that connection extremely clear. And at least in the original, it's not just like nature responding. It's that Godzilla has always existed and probably would have stayed dormant, but it was exactly the atomic bomb and nuclear testing is what caused him to reemerge, basically. It came from the ocean to, you know, feed on humankind as a response to World War II and nuclear testing, which is fascinating. I think something worth talking about because, again, you're definitely not reading too much into it. So when people say that, I'm always like, no, you're right. The original creators and the original audience it was intended for, that was the purpose. And some experts even argue that a lot of the scenes in the original Gojira, which show a lot of mourning of the people in the island that he appears on, and some sort of funerary scenes, and as being a way for Japanese people in that time period to mourn culturally and collectively for what happened during the war.
It's actually really deep when you start looking at it from that level.
Mm-hmm.
not many professors are also media personalities who deal with the paranormal. Yeah. In fact, it seems that one of the criticisms of people who are into the paranormal is that it gives them some sense of importance that makes up for what they lack in academic credibility. But now we have PhDs like yourself and Professor Paul Kingsbury from Simon Fraser University who are looking at the paranormal from an academic perspective through the lens of their cultural significance. And it also turns out that many people who have had paranormal experiences are also well-educated. Now, does this, in your opinion, represent a shift in attitudes by academia towards an acceptance of the paranormal?
I'm not sure if it's an acceptance of academia of the paranormal, but an increasing, or somewhat increasing, recognition of the humanities fields in general as being worthwhile for exploration. I'm not familiar with all the people who study monsters or the paranormal, but a lot of the time they tend to be anthropologists, sociologists, film and media studies, literature, even art or psychologists. And I think that's what the humanities can offer. Again, not necessarily looking for, you know, the scientific physics or engineering or explanations for some of these events and activities, but more about how we can understand the moments that might explain why people said they existed or they saw them at all.
Yeah, and I've argued the same sort of thing with people out here in the world of ufology, that if we were to take it into the world of academia, it really does belong in the humanities. Mm-hmm. And can you see maybe in the future like a department of the paranormal in the humanities that might include things like ufology and all of these other strange things?
I don't know about a whole department. The humanities are being underfunded historically, at least in the United States right now, and have been for very many years. So the chances of a department are very unlikely. But I do think that the more people like myself and some of these other experts and educated individuals are willing to talk about these things, that there's more likely that other people will feel confident enough to explore them. And I think that kind of exploration can only lead to more knowledge. I know I get emails from fans of Monstrum asking, I want to do what you do. Like, what did you study? What course did you take? What do you recommend? And my response to that is always, only do it if you are passionate about it. But you need to have a background in being able to do really good research.
Yeah. More with Dr. Z and Gina Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.